Junks are brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com to join their team today. Chris Doering from SEC Network will join us at 7:40. We'll get back into college football with him. But now it's time to hit the skins because, hello, week one is less than a week away. It's coming. Yeah. It is barreling down on us.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
I had three fantasy drafts. I had two yesterday.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I had one Saturday, two yesterday. I've got one tonight, one tomorrow.
Very good. Love that. I mean, to hear that.
Bickle would be pulling his hair out.
His head would be spinning.
I enjoyed. Cakes helped us with my daughter and her fantasy draft last weekend, or whatever that was. Let me say Thursday, Friday night.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Sure.
I totally got into it.
Get swept up in it.
To me, that's the most fun is the draft. But where you win it, as Cakes knows, is the weekly maintenance.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
where I just don't have it.
You got to churn that roster, baby.
You got to like think about it all at all times.
Yep.
I don't have it.
You got to chase that waiver wire.
I don't have the bandwidth.
Chase that dragon.
I think we have our Johnny draft tonight.
That's tonight?
I believe so.
All John. Oh, that's your fourth one tonight.
Okay. How many
drafts do you have tonight?
Okay, well, I'll pull back the curtain here. The Johnny League is a goofy league amongst guys whose first name is John.
It's a good bit.
Okay, it's a great
Richmond
bit.
John, I think, started it.
It's a great bit. I have my two most important fantasy drafts tonight. Me and my guy, Bikey Botts. We split these high-stakes fantasy teams.
Right.
High-stakes, what, like a couple G's entry, something like that?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a good chunk.
Yeah.
The Johnny League's going to get auto-drafted unless somebody wants to come to the rescue and like actually draft that team.
Auto-drafter usually does okay, right?
It's going to be auto-drafted because I can't give it any attention tonight.
I think I have to do the same thing.
I just can't. I'm sorry.
I have another draft. For me, high stakes is a $300 entry or a $400 entry, and I have another draft at 7. And the Johnny League, I believe, 7:15, or it might be flip-flopping them.
I don't even know. It's so off my radar. All I know is beep, 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 boop. A computer will be drafting my team tonight in that league.
All right, this isn't hit the fantasy league. This is hit the skips.
Yes, it is.
And this is, a couple days away from the official kickoff on Thursday. Of course, we play on Sunday. Is it Sunday, 1 o'clock?
Sunday, 1 o'clock.
Northwest Stadium against the Giants. There's still a little time for a few lists. I don't want to annoy you, but there are like predictions and lists. And by the way, I think that's also something, Valdez, that we need to do here in these next few days. We need to do one final prediction. Right? Because
we're going to do that on Thursday.
On Thursday? Yeah. Okay. We got to do one final prediction, season prediction, post
game by game.
Go game by game. Yeah. We'll do the whole nine.
You're officially on record with your record.
Because, ESPN just did a breakdown recently with our buddy John Keim, with Seth Walder, and with Matt Bowen. Okay. And they broke down every team's strengths and weaknesses, projections, all that stuff. And their total power football index, football power index, came in with Washington projected at 9.1 wins.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Whatever. That's fine. Reasonable. But what's kind of annoying is their analytics guy, Seth Walder, he actually went a step further. Here's his quote. The Commanders will finish below 500.
Oh, no.
Sure, they could continue their ascent, but there are a lot of ways this season could go sideways for the Commanders. The aging defense with a lack of pass rush could fail them. Injury or decline could make McLaurin or Daniels' early down numbers from a season ago merely average could be a better indication of who he is going forward.
Hmm.
So I know a lot of us are hoping that we build on last season.
Yeah.
10, 11, 12 wins maybe if things all fall perfectly and then you can get on a little run. He's got them below 500. Below 500, last time I checked, Cakes, that doesn't
that's
get you
good.
In the playoffs.
It does not.
That
generally does
that's
not.
That's not going to build. Now, we
it
all
did
know
get Ron Rivera into the playoffs.
Wow, that one was a
year.
Weird, fluky year.
Twice because it did in Carolina.
Maybe one of the worst seasons ever for the
now,
NFC
Now, we all
East.
Know the red flags that are out there. The ridiculous sort of fourth down percentages that they had last year where they converted something like 90%. How well they did in the final drives and one score games and everything. The likelihood of them having that same success, unlikely. But hopefully they can make it up in other areas. I do think they do have actually maybe a better pass rush all the way around. I'd like to combat secondary
a little bit when you say it's not likely. All right, maybe it's not likely to be 93% or whatever. But with Jaden Daniels under center, that's a skill. He has a skill at late game comebacks, and he definitely has a skill that helps them convert on fourth downs.
I hope you're right. We're going to put it to the test. My guess is there'll be some regression to the mean. I do think he's a cheat code, and I do think as long as he's healthy and upright, he gives us a chance. But remember, I do think that a likelihood that there's some regression.
Remember, it wasn't just the fourth quarter, you know, last possessions of these. It was also the quarterbacks they faced.
Yeah, totally.
Last year, too.
They had
now,
stretch,
we assume
they
they're going to face better quarterbacks week to week than they did last year.
Also, right. it's assuming that Jaden gets the ball with like 2 minutes to go.
Right, sure.
For instance, you can still lose a one-score game, and it would count as a one-score game if Jaden got the ball with 20 seconds and no timeouts.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Like you're set up to not come back.
One other list that I wanted to bring out there. I'm not sure if we talked about this. Maybe we did, but there is a list of triplets where they rank every NFL's three-headed running back monster. Okay,
right.
Now we've got four when you add McNichols. They've got Eckler, C-Rod, and Bill as our triplets.
Can't be ranked that high.
Where do you think Washington ranked? I'm trying to think.
I'm going to guess it's not
high.
I'm going to guess 25th.
20. Yeah, I would say 24.
No, maybe. Better than that. Better than that. They ranked 12th.
Wow.
12th in the NFL.
That's very high.
And this is by Seth Walder again?
NFL.com.
Okay.
They ranked every team's triplets ahead of the 2025 season, and it named Daniels, Kroski, Merritt, and
Is it the top quarterback, running back, wide out?
Yes,
is that what it is? Okay,
now that makes sense.
Right. That makes more sense.
So they're adding Daniels in there.
No, it's Jaden, Terry.
And then they actually said Bill is their top running back.
Oh, so quarterback, receiver, running back.
That was my instinct because the first time I ever heard triplets really be used was Aikman, Emmett, and Michael Irvin.
Right.
That's what you generally think of with triplets. So 12th is reasonable.
I think so.
I mean, they have a very good receiver. You know, maybe he's not Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase. You've got a very good quarterback. And then the running back's a question.
Running back's a big question mark.
Who's number one, the number one triplet?
Now you
don't have the list?
I'm going to guess Cincinnati.
I thought it was
although
just
running back. Although their running back might not be.
Chase Brown's
pretty
good.
He's okay, but I don't know if that would make them number one.
I think
one.
He's a little bit better than okay.
All right, Philly?
I think Philly could be number one.
Philly could be up there, too.
Okay. Let me see the NFL triplets.
Now, by the way, I believe Kendrick Bourne is scheduled to meet with the Skins today.
Yeah. I think he met with someone last night. He met with someone yesterday.
Yeah. Did he meet with the Niners?
He met with the Niners.
It was the Niners yesterday.
Yesterday, and then he put on his IG story maybe something about going to Dulles Airport.
All right, your number one triplet. Yeah, we kind of slept on this. Is the Ravens.
Okay, Lamar,
Derrick Henry, and they got Zay Flowers, number one. Number two is a pretty good one. The Lions, Goff, Gibbs, Amon-Ra, St. Brown, and then the Eagles came in at three.
Right.
I have no problem with us being
Bengals,
12th.
Four.
I have no problem with us being 12th.
That's your 49ers, five, because they put Kittle as the pass catcher with McCaffrey and Purdy.
Yeah, McCaffrey's just such a question mark.
All right, but
after
Kicks,
last year,
obviously, this really is all about week one. All those lists, you can rank them however you want. And now we're going to start to play for
so
real.
So glad list season's almost done.
The Commanders, they take on the Giants at Northwest Stadium, 1 o'clock. Currently, according to FanDuel, Giants are 6.5-point underdogs. Now, remember, the Giants last year went 3-14. But they redid the roster. They had a strong preseason in comparison to Washington, where the preseason games were kind of a big dud as they were sort of trying out all their backups and back of the roster guys. They averaged 35.7 points per game.
They led the league in scoring. Something tells me that they're not going to be able to transfer that into the regular season. They're not going to be scoring 30
plus
points per game.
Well, 35 is a big number.
Yeah, I think they're going to come in way lower than that.
A lot of that was Jackson Dart.
Right.
Look, last season, both games were close. You had the game early in the season in week two, which was all field goals for the Commanders. Their offense 18. Moved the ball, but they had to settle for 7 field goals. Had a closer game later in the season.
27-22 in week 9.
Dan Graziano, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago from ESPN, and they were doing kind of bold predictions. But here's what you got to worry about with the Giants. He predicted they're going to lead the NFL in sacks. They have a lot of guys, you know, with names at least. Drafted Thibodeau a year ago, draft Abdul Carter. This year, you've got Dexter Lawrence. You got Brian Burns.
They got Burns. He's a stud.
They've got Carter's good players
gonna be,
on defense.
Carter's going to be the Micah Parsons of the Giants. I'm not saying he's going to put up those type of numbers his rookie year, but he's going to be very similar.
He's going to be impactful as a rookie. Yeah.
By the way,
no doubt
did you see
it.
That Parsons may need an epidural to actually play?
I did see that.
In week one. Let's, you know, I hope he has health and everything, but let's hope maybe he doesn't play or he's not up to strength
for
a couple weeks.
It'd be fine if he's sidelined for week two on a short week.
Because we've got them coming up in week two. But here's an interesting little nugget. The Giants haven't started. Look, they've struggled. You know, 2 years ago, they went 6-11. Last year, they went 3-14. In 2023, their opening weekend, they lost 40-0 to the Cowboys. Okay, in 2023. And last year, they lost 28-6 to Minnesota before they finished, you know, 3-14. So they're looking to change that around. I feel like they have some momentum. I think the 6.5 points is a little generous. I'm anxious about this game.
I'm seeing 5.5 on ESPN, so it's fluctuating between sites.
Right, right. What are your keys to this game? Pretty standard,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, my first key is don't let Malik Nabers kill you in this game. Don't let Russ throw 50-yard moon balls to Malik Nabers against this secondary. Well, start seeing that early, that's going to be a problem.
And that's going to be our first real chance, right, to see Trey Amos, as everybody has kind of said, has had kind of like the offseason of, I don't know, of the team. Mm-hmm. He's the one, like, sort of stalwart there on the back end. Everyone has said that Lattimore, he's been out there, he's been available. He looks healthier than he has last year. But they haven't really gone against other guys. They've been going against Terry McLaurin-less receiving core and looked really, really good. But how are they going to look against the Malik Nabers?
It's going to be very interesting. Based on what we saw in the preseason.
If they don't win the first game.
It's going to be very interesting.
Quinn's going to be criticized a lot for giving his veteran so many days off. And by not playing the guys in the preseason very much.
Maybe. Or it's just we're just not that good.
Well, I want to see how the offensive line, on paper, looks a lot better. I want to see how they do against this pass rush.
Yeah, this is a big test for the offensive line.
Because this is a legit pass rush.
I don't know exactly how they're going to. Like, how are they going to incorporate Connolly? Did he do enough to start in week one? Everybody says they were really pleased with his progress throughout the summer. But, yeah, I think the revamped offensive line should be better. How's that going to hold up against all those pass rushers that you mentioned with New York? That's going to be critical. Now, again, with Jaden, he kind of makes everything better. You know, he makes even your offensive line look better because he could take off and run. That's the other thing that we have to keep in mind as we kept hearing all of these reports of the defense getting the better of the offense this summer. Two things. A, the offense didn't have Terry, which obviously changes everything. And B, Jaden's not running like a chicken with his head cut off in training camp.
I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of quick passing game against this Giants aggressive defense. I think you're going to see a lot of Debo in this game, some shorter routes to get that ball out quickly. So that pass rush isn't in on Jaden.
Besides
Jaden,
who's the most interesting thing for you? I think is it Bill or is it Debo?
I think it's Debo for me.
I think it's Debo.
Yeah, I think it's Debo. I just think he's going to be. I agree with Cakes. I think he's going to be a big part of their offense on Sunday.
I think so too.
I'm intrigued by how the running back room pie is carved up in week one. I'm also intrigued by can Kinlaw anchor the defense and shut down the run.
Yeah.
Well, because if Tyrone Tracy and Scadaboo come in and just have their way, then you're going to be worried about the run defense all season long.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kinlaw. That signing did not bear any fruit. That's 1 week. Yeah. But if they come in and gouge the run defense, it's going to be a scary thing for the rest of the season.
Is it possible that the Giants are one of those teams that come from nowhere?
Definitely. And, I brought that up.
Make a turnaround? Do you think they can go from 3 wins to like 9?
No. That's a big jump. I don't think so.
That's too big a jump.
I don't think so.
I think they could get to 6, 7, 8.
I have a hard time believing in Russ at this point.
Nine's
because he was
a big
so
number.
Bad down the stretch last year with the Steelers.
Yeah.
Like his last 4 games, I think he was under 200 yards passing in each game. He was just flat out bad.
Yeah, but maybe he'll be better with Dable, who's a little more of a quarterback guy than Arthur Smith, right? Who's the OC?
I just think Russ is getting towards the end.
Of course. Of course. But he could still spin it. He could still throw it.
EB, I think it's possible. Because we know there will be a team that rises up.
Yeah.
And you like their parts on defense. I still think Dable's a good coach, even though the last couple seasons have been disastrous.
Right.
And now I think he has a competent quarterback who's not going to lose it for him. And then you've got Malik Nabers. You like that. You like a lot of the pieces, I think, for the New York Giants.
I just need to get the preseason bitter taste out of my mind. Even though everyone knows preseason doesn't matter. We've won Super Bowls. We've gone winless. But when you literally have the worst point differential or second worst, whatever we had in the NFL, and you look so bad every opportunity you were on TV, I need to get that taste out of my mouth. I need to get a good one.
I'm not afraid of Russell Wilson in this game. I'm not afraid of they're going to march up and down the field passing the ball. No. I would be afraid of just their pass rush and their defense causing problems. Causing problems early in the game for Jaden.
You don't think that Cliff can dial up some quick passing
and stuff?
I'm sure he will. Yeah. He's going to try. I just think that that's a really good front seven.
You don't think Jaden can evade a guy or two and take off?
I don't think he can. I know he can.
Right.
We've all seen it.
I'm confident, but I'm not uber confident like I was when the schedule first came out.
Yeah.
I will say that the Giants do seem to have a little momentum to them. Now, I think some of that is with Jackson Dart, who I don't think is going to play for a while. So that's good. We'll play an older
If the
Russ.
Giants get off to a rough start, you know, they start 1-4 or 2-5, you're going to see Jackson Dart before long.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, Dable clearly loves him. But we shouldn't see him. We don't have to worry about him in week one. I think it's going to be all Russ.
It should be.
It's going to be all Russ.
That should be the case.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, we will touch on Arch Manning and his debut against Ohio State. It didn't go very well. We'll break that down next here on The Fan. Chris Doering, longtime friend of the Junks, now analyst for SEC Network. He's going to join us coming up at 7:40. We'll break down college football week one with him. The headliner for the weekend was number one Texas traveling to number three Ohio State. Ohio State prevails 14-7. Let's be honest, snoozer of a game. I mean, 14-7, defensive battle, and all eyes were on Arch Manning, and pretty underwhelming. Underwhelming performance for Arch Manning in the huge spotlight.
I would say
It's a tough out.
Even though he did start,
he started 4 games last year, but he had all this offseason hype. Everyone's looking at him. It's a tough out to go to Ohio State, who haven't lost a home opener since before I was married. All right, so it's been a long time, and he didn't play well, no doubt. And it was a defensive game, and we certainly expected a lot more offense from Texas, but that's can't give up on Arch Manning after that game.
No,
I wouldn't give up on him, but I was like, whoa, he's way more raw. Like, he's not winning the Heisman.
He threw some bad passes.
Yeah, he just doesn't look ready. I mean,
he didn't look ready.
I'm sure he'll look better at times. But
he's far from a finished product at this point.
Yes.
Yeah. I would totally agree with that. He did not play like the number one overall pick in the draft.
Now, could it have been a training wheels situation where maybe they need to actually let him do a little bit more?
Well, I tell you,
he's facing
a
national champion, right? He's facing. Yeah.
Of course.
A team that's going to be a national championship contender this year. He's facing great competition. But maybe they held him back to an extent. I don't know. He did have a nice touchdown pass.
His touchdown pass was the best moment, other than some of his runs. I thought some of his runs were decent.
He just wasn't in sync for the entire
game. Like last year, Jaden's first game, we felt like he was in training wheels.
No, I didn't think
wheels.
It was that. No, because he was throwing downfield. He was throwing like into guys, interceptions, double coverage. He was throwing behind guys. He just wasn't in sync.
Yeah. He wasn't.
It didn't look like the guy, like, supposedly there were a bunch of NFL scouts there.
Hey,
oh yeah,
a lot
I
of
mean,
people.
That's crazy.
A lot of people said if he was so good, why didn't he beat out Ewers?
Yeah. 2 years he didn't beat him out.
He just did not look comfortable. Threw a couple of nice passes, but you know, his pick was bad. 17 for 30. Didn't even crack 200 yards.
I mean, there's a chance he's overhyped.
There's a good chance of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But can't give
up. But there's also a chance that he'll turn it around and, you know, is he going to win the Heisman like a lot of people predicted?
He's not winning the Heisman. Probably not. That's already over. Yeah. Not winning the Heisman. There's no chance. Not good enough.
This is what Paul Feinbaum of ESPN said about him.
It is the biggest opening game I think we have ever had, and there are a lot of reasons for it, but the main reason is Arch Manning.
Oh.
I've said it, so I'll say it again. He's the best player we have seen from every aspect since Tim Tebow. Maybe not, he has not proven it yet, but in terms of magic and majesty and buzz, that's where we are. People are going to be watching this game today who would never normally watch a college football game.
He was short-arming throws. He was overthrowing guys.
His delivery was weird.
His delivery was weird. He was thrown into double coverage quite a lot. It was just not great.
He just didn't look comfortable.
I'm not saying he sucks, but he just was not ready for that amount of
scrutiny. If they would have opened up with Ohio U instead of Ohio State,
yeah.
Okay, probably puts up three or four touchdowns. But
we all did it. We fell into the Manning trap.
Right.
I mean, it was being forced
into a honeypot.
It was being force fed down our throats. JP took Texas in our parlay because of Arch Manning.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't know that I felt for him.
We didn't realize that he is a 20-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm. 20-year-old kid.
With still developing.
Yeah, not a lot of experience at this level. It's
now you put yourself up for criticism when you're making $6 million in NIL money, but at the end of the day, he's a 20-year-old kid who still has things he needs to work out.
And he might be good. He played Ohio State. No, yeah. You know, Ohio State might run the table and go undefeated this year. They're the national champions. Now they're a loaded team. And as Jason said, they're playing a home opener in front of, what, 100,000 people?
Yeah, at least.
That's a tough environment for anybody. Even the most seasoned quarterback would have a tough time against him.
And he was better in the second half than he was in the first.
And look, he could be overhyped. But I think at one point he was the number one high school recruit. And sometimes those ratings don't work out.
That's also could be
Texas has chosen to start him. That's not like he's starting at Bethune-Cookman. Mm-hmm. He's starting at Texas.
Yeah, the good news for him is after that brutal opener, their next three all at home, and they face San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston. So it's a chance for him to gain some confidence against some lesser opponents before they start their
at Florida
real SEC gauntlet.
Yeah.
So that's the good news for Arch. The next 3 weeks, Cupcake City. It gets tougher.
He certainly didn't look like the number one pick in the draft.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Okay. Carson Beck did. But, you know, let's just wait and see. Let's see how much better he gets against some of these subpar teams. And then the Florida game in week 5, you know, down there in Gainesville, that's going to be big.
I know he missed some throws, but were guys wide open that he was just missing left and right?
Yes. Yeah. On the final drive, yes. Couple. On the crossing route. And it wasn't just the throws. He was misreading the field.
Mm-hmm.
Players were open.
I thought he was throwing into double coverage. I thought he was throwing behind guys. He was short-arming throws. He was kind of all over the place.
But there was a lot of pressure on this kid, man.
There was so much pressure.
Everyone was talking about it. He knew
it. And also, he was going against, like they said, right? Wasn't it Matt Patricia who was the defensive coordinator?
Yeah, Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator.
He was like a great defensive coordinator.
It was almost like the hype was so built up. It was going to be impossible unless he threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns to live up to it.
I just thought early on, immediately, I thought, oh, this guy's raw.
But even if he would have gone, you know, 20 of 32 and threw a couple touchdowns, but they won the game. They went into Ohio State and won. He would have gotten props.
That would have been good. Yeah.
But simple fact that they only scored 7 and he wasn't very good and they lost. That's the bigger thing. They lost. That killed him.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, who knows? I wish, man, wouldn't it be amazing if you could have a Manning cast? While Arch is playing, wouldn't that be incredible?
How awkward would that be though when he's
struggling,
stinking it up?
And you see Peyton just going, oh, yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna guess the other two Mannings would probably not want to do that show.
Yeah,
they would probably acquiesce to somebody else.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. But yeah, so he was, I think, plus 650, right?
to win the Heisman.
To win the Heisman going into
He was the front runner,
yeah,
I believe.
That's gone. I mean,
yeah, if you're holding that ticket, you're not a happy person today.
I mean, if they run the table, he could get back in it.
I don't think
Texas was in the college football championship in the playoffs last year.
I don't think he's capable.
Yeah, but it's not like the MVP where your team needs to be in the, like you could win the Heisman with your team winning 9 games, 8 games, and missing the college football playoff.
Yeah, if you put up
like
gaudy Travis numbers, Hunter, yeah. He's not going to put up gaudy numbers every week.
He's already on the outside looking in.
Totally. I agree, but he could go on a roll. Is what I'm saying. Cakes just brought up the next three opponents.
He looks too.
He could find his sea legs and start rolling.
But he doesn't look accurate enough.
He's going to be judged by what he does in conference play against big teams.
Against big teams, he's not going to put up big numbers.
I mean, he's going to put up big numbers against these next three, sure. But let's see. Now it's all going to be. What's he doing in Gainesville?
But like, if you're a Browns fan,
against Oklahoma the next week,
and Oklahoma,
or who are the teams like the Brown? Who are the teams that were allegedly like they're just tanking for
Colts?
Browns.
I mean, some people have said the Cowboys.
He's not your guy next year. He's not anywhere close to it. So I think that should take that off the table already.
He was plus 600 at the beginning of the season, and now FanDuel has him plus 1800.
Yeah.
For Heisman odds for Arch Manning.
Yeah.
Man, that's a steep drop.
Yeah. But but he is intriguing, and he is athletic, and he is a big, strong kid, and he does have the Manning genes and the Manning tutorial, right? And all the Manning experience where those guys can teach him. So I will watch him. I'm not writing him off completely. But he was nowhere near ready for the kind of hype.
Look, he said at SEC Media Days, back in June or July, whenever that was, he goes, I got a lot of proof.
Yeah.
He says, I got a lot to prove.
Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys who were, expected to put up huge numbers in week one, I mean, Klubnik was probably the third favorite before this this past week. Mm-hmm. He was terrible. So he had to have dropped.
I thought the TCU quarterback was impressive.
Yeah, Hoover.
Yeah,
he was good.
Is he rated highly for like ex-NFL guys? No, he doesn't look like a big, strong kid. I mean, he's strong, but he doesn't look like a big kid. I don't know.
He was good, but
dare I say Malik had a better debut. Feldes,
no doubt,
100%.
He wasn't facing Ohio State, but he looked good. He looked pretty strong in College Park. It's a good start for him. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to talk college football. Chris Doering, analyst for the SEC Network, he's going to join us next here on The Fan. Time now to head out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We say good morning to Chris Doering, analyst for the SEC Network, longtime friend of the Junks.
CD's the best, man, because I text CD yesterday. All right, it's Labor Day, and I'm sure he's hanging out with his kids, and I don't know what he's doing. Probably working. But he says, bro, I've got a hit at 7:15, and I got my show at 8. He goes, I can get you in at 7:40.
Nice. Look at this guy.
And I said, man, you are the man.
That's a grinder.
Because he always makes time for the Junks, and
good
I appreciate
dude.
It. Chris,
dude.
I do appreciate that.
We got to go back to how we started here. You said longtime friend. I was thinking about this, man. I started coming on with you guys back in 2002, so we're talking about almost 25 years of a relationship here.
Yep.
I would make much more of room for you guys than I would a lot of these other folks that hit me up.
How many people texted you or called you this weekend to try and get you on to recap week one?
Oh, man. It, over the last couple of weeks, it's been, it's common courtesy because, as you said, I'm going on my show and we ask people to come on and do hits with us. But two, it's a privilege for people to even think about wanting to have on. But it's a little overwhelming, man. You don't ever want to say no to anybody. But, it was a lot. There was a lot of requests. And, we're trying to filter through it. It's that time of year. You said hanging out with my friends or my kids. I have not done anything. But Thursday on, it has been nothing
all
but football and shows. So
okay.
It's been a lot, but a lot of fun too.
Chris, when you were playing for the Redskins, when did you kind of start preparing for a media career? Maybe it started while you were in college.
Yeah.
When did you kind of know, hey, this is kind of something I want to do down the road?
Well, I got my degree in telecommunications. Florida has one of the best J schools around, so I kind of had an idea that I wanted to get into broadcasting some way or another. I couldn't do the on-air stuff news during school because we had football obligations. So sure. I did production, which, you know, learning the behind-the-scenes stuff has certainly benefited my career. But as I, you know, even dating back to Florida and then on into the NFL, I always tried to make myself available to the media, understanding kind of that was the gateway to the fans and also an opportunity to get some reps in. So, yeah, I think I always kind of had that in the back of my mind, but I go back and look at some of those interviews from Florida and early days in the NFL. They were not good by any means, but I think, like anything else, man, it's just about getting reps.
All right, we wanted to talk to you about three games, all SEC teams playing. Obviously, Bama, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about LSU-Clemson. But your thoughts on Texas, Ohio State, and Arch Manning getting all this hype for months, for years, and just did not look in sync pretty much for the entire game, in my opinion.
We knew it was going to happen, right? It was impossible for anybody to live up to the amount of hype that had been surrounding Arch Manning. I mean, I think – you know, we were all kind of caught up in the excitement of watching the debut, but that's a tough situation, man, taking over the starting quarterback reins at Ohio State in that environment with the type of roster talent that they have, particularly on the defensive side. I was really surprised with how well Matt Patricia did in terms of migrating from the NFL to the college game with things being different, including some of the rules and the time you have with the players. I thought they had a great plan. And to go back and put it all on Arch is a little unfair. I mean, you had busts in protection. You had receivers not, you know, getting open. But at the end of the day, there were some decisions that were made, some inaccuracies. And maybe the problem that I had the most was his look of being scared. That last drive on third down, I think it's third and seven, they got a shallow cross coming across the formation. There's not a defender around him. He's fallen back, stepping away from the throw and just kind of sidearming it out there. Threw it high and behind the receiver. If you throw it out in front, it's probably a 20-yard gain and the drive continues. But that's the thing that surprised me after going back and watching tape last year where he looked so poised in the pocket, the delivery was on time, his accuracy was there. You know, I don't know how you clean that up. Maybe against a different opponent, he's not feeling those same things. But you know, he's a good quarterback, man. I expect him to be better. I expect that entire team to be better. It's a tough game to open your season with, and I give them a lot of credit for scheduling it.
Chris, how shocked were you by the outcome in Tallahassee as Florida State handles Alabama, just dominates them on the ground, outrushed them 230-87. Alabama was sloppy, committing 8 penalties. I mean, this does not look like the Alabama empire that Nick Saban built. DeBoer, you know, already on the hot seat, just one game into year two.
It doesn't look like the Alabama empire, but it looks like the Alabama team from last year. Now they've lost 5 of 6 away from Tuscaloosa. And what are some of the common themes in those losses? Mobile quarterbacks still continue to tear their defense up. Castellanos was tremendous in Gus Malzahn's offense. The penalties, as you mentioned, those two things kind of date back to even some of the late years with Coach Saban. But I think the thing that kind of surprised me the most was just how out-physical they were. It reminded me a lot of the Vanderbilt game last year, and I think I talked to you guys about it then. That wasn't a fluky win. The better team won. The better team took it to them on the lines of scrimmage, and that's the same thing that happened in Tallahassee on Saturday. Florida State was the aggressor, even to the point where 4th and 1 from their own 35-yard line in the fourth quarter, they're going for it because they know they can get a push up front. And all we talked about all offseason was how deep and talented and experienced this defense was that returned so many players from last year, how much better the offensive line was going to be. The offensive line looked like trash. I mean, you say what you want about Ty Simpson, and he made his share of bad throws, but he was under duress a ton. I think he was 1 of 11 when pressured with 3 sacks and an interception. So there's a lot of blame to go around there as well. I just don't know if you can fix it. I don't know how you can fix the inability to be more – have a greater sense of urgency. I've heard a lot of people talk about how lethargic they look. I think that's true. But just the lack of fight and aggression and wanting to impose your will on the lines of scrimmage just wasn't there again.
Yeah, where does that come from? Because
I have no idea.
I mean, Saban's teams never played like that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a little entitlement. You know, a lot of these guys are highly recruited players that think they've made it by the time they get to Tuscaloosa, even more so now with the money that they're making. You know, maybe there's some, you know, taking your foot off the gas because you think you've arrived at this point, but that was never a factor. You know, I think I want to say that Kalen DeBoer already has more losses against unranked teams than what Nick Saban did in 17 years there. So the lack of preparedness and sense of urgency is concerning for sure. I've always liked Kalen DeBoer. I thought they got the right person for the job, but man, to see these things happen over and over again, and credit Florida State. I think Florida State's roster is much better than last year. Gus Malzahn's plan for Alabama was tremendous, but just the lack of real ability to impose their will on the line of scrimmage is not Alabama-esque by any means.
That just puts a lot of pressure on them the rest of the way, no doubt.
No doubt. Not much margin for error.
All right, so LSU goes into Clemson. I was also very surprised. I thought Clemson would win the game. I thought there would be more points scored. Cade Klubnik, who had 43 combined touchdowns last year, he looked bad. He was getting rushed. He was out of the pocket pretty much the entire game. They couldn't run the ball at all. LSU's got a lot of different players, specifically from the portal. Nussmeier's, 28 completions. He was solid. This surprised me because LSU's defense was not that good last year, but they look legit going into Clemson and win that game.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I was surprised necessarily. I did pick, LSU to win the SEC and the national championship this year, but this was a great test where we wanted to find out, some things about LSU and how they've gotten better from last year. Particularly, probably three or four things come to mind. One, the offensive line, with losing what they did up front, that was something I wanted to see. Could you protect Garrett Nussmeier? Could you move people on the line of scrimmage, especially a really talented defensive front like Clemson has? The answer was yes. Will you commit to running the football, which I thought Joe Sloan got away from a lot of times last year? He did not in this one. They end up having, almost 21 minutes of possession in the second half. So dominated, in terms of taking the air out of the second half and being able to move the ball, running the football. Three, their defense. Their defense was abysmal last year, and Blake Baker was brought in to fix that. It was a quantum leap, similar to the one they had in Missouri when he was there from year one to year two. And then four, the ability to finish, something that had eluded them, particularly in openers over the last 3 years. That second half, they pretty much dominated. They win 14-0. I mentioned the time of possession, almost 21 minutes there. And I thought it was great complementary football, the ability to move the chains on offense, possess the football, and then an attacking defense. I thought the best part about it, though, Blake Baker understanding where to use his pieces, understanding the roster a little bit better, how to plug and play those guys. And how apropos was it that last fourth down play, Cade Klubnik's under pressure from a guy that had been forgotten about in recent years, Harold Perkins Jr. I thought playing in that star position was perfect for him, and then using him as a spy to kind of just mirror Klubnik and fire when he got outside of the pocket was exactly what LSU fans had been hoping to see.
And it gets real for your boys who they pounced on Long Island this
past
weekend.
Did you watch any of that game?
I just saw some highlights.
Long Island had two first downs. It was like a glorified high school team. I don't know what Florida got out of it for the most part, but you're right. Like, you go back and look at the Gators' schedule. They play USF this week, who USF pounded Boise, so that game looks a lot different. Then they go to Baton Rouge the following week. You look at the schedule, Miami looked tremendous in beating Notre Dame. Florida has to go down there after the trip to Baton Rouge, and then Florida State, as good as they looked, the Gators have to finish their schedule with them, and that's on top of the SEC schedule they'll face. So I have no doubt that Florida's schedule by the end of the year will be the most difficult in the country.
Oh, no doubt. Four consecutive weeks at LSU, at Miami, Texas, at A&M. I mean, that's just brutal.
Four consecutive games. There is a bye week before Texas,
a bye week.
But
okay.
That's a tough four-game stretch for sure.
Hey, Chris, how good is that Nick Harbor kid out of South Carolina? We know him from he's from our backyard. He's from D.C. It was a kid that Maryland really wanted but lost to South Carolina. He flashed that big playability against Virginia Tech over the weekend.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was down at South Carolina's training camp a couple weeks ago, and two players stood out to me out there. One was Fred Johnson, number zero, the middle linebacker that ended up having 10 tackles in that ball game on Sunday, and then Nick Harbor. And he's always been a freak. I mean, I'm standing there talking to him, looking up at him. There's not a lot of guys at 6'4 that I look up at, but I'm looking up at this dude, and I think he had been done a disservice. He'd never played receiver before. Everybody's projecting because of watching that 100-meter video where he blows away the field at that size, that he was just a plug-and-play guy. he's learned the nuances of playing the receiver position. He didn't run track in the spring, committing to becoming a better receiver. I saw the way he caught the ball at practice. I saw the way that he was more comfortable running routes. And this is a guy that you know, with all of those physical gifts, now that he's figuring things out, I love that combo between he and Lenora Sellers, man. That's going to be a fun team to watch this year.
Hey, real quick, Vanderbilt, you mentioned them. Vanderbilt, you know, they beat Charleston Southern big, not a matchup there. But now Vanderbilt has to go to Blacksburg. Virginia Tech was dreadful. You watched it. They were dreadful offensively. Defensively, they kept them in it. The punt return killed them, but offensively, they were awful. Vanderbilt beat them last year because Pavia killed them. I think he and Cedric Alexander are going to give the Hokies a lot of problems. If the Hokies lose another one to Vandy, especially it's their home opener, and they go 0-2, oh, man, all the pressure in the world on Brent Pry.
I was over. We were watching a game on Sunday with Alyssa Lang and her dad at her dad's house. Her dad and some of their friends are all Virginia Tech grads. Alyssa's a South Carolina grad, so it was kind of a fun dynamic to watch the game in. But just listening to the Virginia Tech fans lament where their program is and kind of longing for the glory days, it is sad, man, because that's one of the programs of our, you know, of our kind of era that had a great rise and certainly a great home field advantage. Now, Vanderbilt is not the same Vanderbilt of the old, but, losing 2 years in a row to them, starting your season off 0-2 is not a good deal for Brent Pry by any means.
Chris, thanks as always, man. We appreciate the time. Thanks for fitting us in,
man.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, I love you guys, man.
All right, thank you, buddy.
That's Chris Doering, analyst for the SEC Network.
He's awesome.
He's always great.
I mean, he's starting his show in 5 minutes.
Very cool of him to take some time.
Very cool.
We do appreciate that. Coming up later in the show today, we'll give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to go see Dave Chappelle. He is at Capital One Arena this fall. When we come back, we'll tell you about a big change that's in store at your Costco location starting today.